This is the Coast 89.7 Weekly News Magazine, Dialogue, highlighting local news stories and events in our Cape Breton communities.
Hello and welcome back to Dialogue on the Coast 89.7. I'm Bill McCush. There are some familiar faces in the mayor's seat at City Hall and around the council chambers after the recent municipal election. We'll go downtown to hear about the official opening of one of the community's newest features. Cora Perrigo goes up north for a special report on Dialogue. Ottawa has announced new funding for upgrades to Cape Breton Transit. And if you're in the mood for a Halloween treat, Bill Bradley wraps up the show with a Cape Breton favorite this time of year. These stories are coming up on the Coast. For the third time, Cecil Clark is the mayor-elect of the Cape Breton Regional Municipality. In front of a large group of supporters at the Horizon Achievement Centre in Sydney, he said he wants to hit the ground running.
Please welcome my husband and the next mayor of the Cape Breton Regional Municipality, Cecil Clark!
Hard to believe that two words don't seem sufficient, but from the bottom of my heart, thank you for putting our taxpayers first, for getting back to basics, for getting the job done for the taxpayers of the city. Dad, you told me the first time I was elected to never forget the ash pile I grew up on. And I'll never forget my roots in Cape Breton because my heart is in this island and my passion is for this place. And we will continue to work and strive for prosperity and find a place for all. I can't wait to get to work. A campaign is not done by one candidate. It's been done by a phenomenal team. And I've been blessed, truly blessed, like all of you that are here and across the senior room who have believed in me, who have worked hard for us to achieve this success. But tonight is the start of work. We have to celebrate tonight. We have to thank everybody who put their name on a ballot, whether it was for mayor or councillor. And I say thank you to everyone who was willing to serve in democracy for our municipality. And congratulations to those that are now elected or are still waiting for results. But I can tell you, I'm ready to get to work. My first message this evening was from Premier Houston. My first call was with Premier Houston, and then with Minister John Lohr for Municipal Affairs. We're meeting next week. So if you're wondering if I'm ready for a swearing-in ceremony, I'm not. I'm in Halifax next week, meeting with Premier Houston, meeting with Minister John Lohr, and we're getting the job done early, and we're going to be never let go. We're going to make sure we serve the people and serve them well by, when I talk about current priorities, they're your priorities. And when I say get back to basics, I truly mean it. And sometimes in a discussion, we forgot to talk about other priorities in our community, like our policing, our fire service, our public works. All the things that matter to day-to-day life for the citizens of this municipality will be first and foremost on my agenda. We will see the accomplishment, Claire, of getting you finding that library. Claire Dethridge, we owe you that for your legacy of this community and service for 37 years. Thank you, Claire. Address the challenges within our community, and we're not going to be shy about making the right decisions. And the right decisions are not always the easy decisions, but we will do it in the interest of making sure our community is strong and vibrant and assured that our future is one that will be bright, that prosperity can be shared, and we can open up our community to a wider world of people that see opportunity that can be seized here. I'm so grateful, as I say, and thankful for this opportunity. You know the role you've played. Your presence here, I cannot put words together for. And I also want to say again to my husband, Kyle, I love you. Dad, mom, and me. And I want to do a special shout out to my mom who got out of the hospital this morning, and that's how I started my day. And I'll leave it at Mom, I love you, or I'm not going to keep going. She knows I love her, my family. And each and every one of you, I make a solemn pledge that I will serve, and I will not be afraid to take on the challenges that lay before us, because the opportunities outweigh each and every one of them. And I want to tell you that this is one of the greatest honors to publicly serve. And one of the things that people say, why do you want to do this? Because I believe in this community. I was taught that public service is important, and standing up to challenges is not something to cower from. And I can tell you my faith carries me through many different things, and I thank God for giving me the strength to go through any adversity, to create the opportunity and the success we've achieved tonight. We will move forward with that faith in our community and our people. We will not be shy of what lays before us, but we will be steadfast, certain, and strong in serving the people of the Cape Breton Regional Municipality to be a growing community and a community that's part of a vibrant Nova Scotia, working in partnership with everyone. And I look forward to reaching out to all the candidates that ran in the Cape Breton Regional Municipality to renew relationships with colleagues across the province. But I can tell you, come Monday morning, I'm on the job for you. Have fun tonight. Let's celebrate and let's move forward.
In a field of 9 candidates, Clark took the win with 34% of the vote, followed by Joe Ward with 24, Rankin McSween with 23, and James Edwards with 13. Archie McKinnon garnered 4% of the vote, with smaller shares going to Carla George, Kevin McCachran, Donnie Bassage, and Vince Hall. Meanwhile, the new Cape Breton Regional Council will have both fresh and familiar faces. 5 councillors were acclaimed: Gordon MacDonald in District 1, Erling McMullen in District 2, and Steve Gillespie in District 4, as well as Glenn Perouche in 6 and Steve Parsons in 7. Edmund Blue Marshall Marshall is also no stranger to the council chambers. The new District 3 councillor previously served from 2004 to 2008 and from 2016 to 2020. District 5 councillor Eldon MacDonald is back after beating his only challenger. Stephen McNeil narrowly won the District 8 seat, and Dave McKeegan defeated incumbent Ken Tracy in District 9. Paul Nikituk is the new councillor for District 10. Darren O'Quinn returns in District 11. And Kim Shepherd defeated incumbent Lauren Green in District 12. Before the winners were declared, voters flocked to the Alderwick Arts Centre to cast their votes. Coast Radio spoke to some of them. This lady says she doesn't like elections because of the rhetoric and mudslinging.
I don't like election campaigns because they call people down and whatever. I'm not speaking specifically of this one, but I don't really like campaigns because of the way they go about it.
But you felt it was important to come and vote here. Is it because you want to see change in your community?
I only try to pick the person that I think is better qualified.
There were 9 people to choose from. Did you find that overwhelming?
Very much, yeah. Some people, I think, just put their names in. I don't know if they expected to win. But anyway, if they want to do it, I guess.
This voter said a popular candidate convinced her because they were specific about the issues.
Well, I thought it was really interesting in terms of that we've had repeat individuals that have been trying for, again, I think we've had a lot of interested people, and hopefully it will make a difference in the city, because I think the reality is that we're not on the cusp of anything. We have to put things in place so we can get there. And hopefully we'll be able to do that after today.
Do you think the person who you voted for, and without saying who, do you think that person convinced you that change will...
Absolutely. Out of all of the candidates, he was the one person who has ideas. And not just vitriol that we hear constantly in campaigns. I will and I'll try. And he had specifics for all of the things that I'm concerned about. And so hopefully, from what I understand, a lot of other people think so too. So,
Do you think that it was a little bit convoluted with so many voices, nine candidates?
No, because I think that it, you know, in democracy, for it to be healthy, as many people as they want to should participate. And, you know, like I've told people, well, you know, if the person I vote for doesn't follow through with what they said, well, then I'll just vote for somebody else next time. And that's the wonderful thing about democracy. Yeah. We don't have to keep people in for 20 years and 30 years. We can give them an opportunity, and when they don't follow through, then change. Change is always good, and I think that we need change now more than ever.
Okay, just one more question. Do you think it was engaging with the debates and the social media presence that the candidates had? Did you feel engaged?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think a lot of the engagement is based on the individual themselves in terms of wanting to look for the information, right? And I think we're seeing things change in terms of how campaigns operate. They operate differently almost in every province. And I think it's important. I think being able to take criticism is important. And we historically here have a tendency to anybody that doesn't agree with the status quo, then they end up being labeled. And I didn't get that. I didn't hear that this time. So hopefully, we'll get some change.
This couple was disappointed because no one knocked on their door looking for their vote. They had to go online to research.
I never saw nobody around. I didn't know to come to the door. And I never went to the debate because I was busy. And I don't know. Just never. Nobody. Like years ago, people come to your door. And they knock on the door and ask for your support and that. They don't do that no more.
You didn't see any of that?
No, never saw none of that. No. And the odd sign here and there. I went right to Glace Bay, and it was on the odd sign here and there.
But yet you came to vote, do you feel?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I always do more.
Read up on them, eh?
Yeah, like I read up on them on Facebook.
Yeah.
And I voted for the person that I thought would do the best job.
So you feel you had to go to social media to learn about the candidates because you were...
Yes, I had to go to social media because I never met them in person.
And you, ma'am, how did you feel about it?
It's about the same way. So we live in the seniors and, you know, we don't go too far. So, but anyway, good luck to them all.
When they were discussing and debating the issues, did someone stand out more than the others?
Yeah, one fella did. Really stood out. One guy really stood out. More than the other eight. There's nine of them running, I think. One guy stood out among the other eight.
But anyway, change is good.
And this gentleman was distracted by politics south of the border and couldn't really concentrate on what was happening on the municipal level.
Truth is, I'm more preoccupied with what's happening next door and the possibility of Trump returning. You know, if there's an election, I think I have an obligation to pay some attention. And I think normally I'm not just making excuses. Normally I would, but that next door has got me preoccupied. I mean, that election. Anyway, I'm getting off the subject. If that hadn't been going on, I would have paid more attention here. So all I had to do was look at the list of people, especially running for mayor, and the only guy that I kind of knew had the kind of experience that I think might help. He'd have a much better perspective on what's going on and what's needed. But whether or not he can make any substantial changes, I'm not sure.
It's interesting, though, sir, where you're saying you're preoccupied about what's happening in the U.S., that it's overbearing here.
Yeah.
So you felt like you couldn't pay attention so much here because you were so concerned about what's happening and its effect on us, what will happen in that election.
Oh, yeah, I think if he gets back, but it's not just that if he gets back, it's given what's known about him as a person. And it can still be neck and neck with this woman with real credentials. Doesn't matter that she's got real credentials.
Meanwhile, there was an unusual sight at the Eldwig Arts Center polling station on election day. There was an ambulance parked by the main entrance for about an hour. Nobody was seriously hurt, but it is said that it was more of an inspirational moment when it comes to civic pride and being engaged with the election process. There was a couple, a husband and a wife, both 86 years old. They had some mobility issues. The lady was using a walker. After she cast her ballot, she went to the restroom. While she was in there, she felt uncomfortable and fell down and couldn't get back to her feet. A few people walking by at the time saw that the husband was in distress trying to help her, and they entered the washroom to help both of them. She was in very good spirits, a very tough lady. She hurt her knee a little bit, but she said she was just mostly embarrassed about what happened. Her husband mentioned that even though they were having trouble to get around, it was very important to them to come out and vote. They had been doing that for years. While waiting for the ambulance, the husband said his wife has cancer and she's recovering from a broken hip and a broken leg. But again, he said that they just had to do their part in the democratic process and come out and cast their vote. Again, she was not seriously hurt. She was mostly disappointed that she had to miss the closing Celtic Colors concert at Center 200. Political science professor Tom Urbaniak joined Coast News director Bobby Nock for wall-to-wall coverage of the election results, and he had this to say about the couple who came out to vote despite mobility problems and illness.
Thank goodness she's okay, and I just hope that there's no long-term injury, and I just want to wish her well and lots of comfort and friendship and a sense of community around her. And I think that's the kind of community we are. I'm hopeful, despite the fact that in the wider world, we're living through this culture of anger and division and recrimination. We see a world torn by violence, a lot of big crises, existential crises in some cases. But then we have our Cape Breton communities where there still is a sense of community. And I want to acknowledge the civility. Actually, we saw a lot of civility on the part of most of the candidates running across the island. People who, in good faith, shared a little bit about themselves, their background, their experience, who thought about how to make their communities better, who put forward some interesting ideas without attacking other candidates or other citizens. And that was the norm across Cape Breton this election. And I want to acknowledge that. I also want to acknowledge all the conversations that have happened, intergenerational conversations about the options, sometimes discouragement and disappointment about some of the options, but nonetheless, constructive conversations that have happened. And of course, just sort of the ultimate manifestation of a sense of citizenship, the determination to vote, whether electronically or in person, despite sometimes having a lot of obstacles and barriers.
Another voter who didn't want to be recorded said they hope whomever wins will get the work done on the issues met with promises made during the campaign. They say construction of a new library is needed in the municipality, but everyone needs to be on the same page or a new library in Sydney will remain to be a fantasy. Cape Breton Regional Municipality is getting $2.3 million in federal funding to meet a public transit ridership increase and to provide an affordable green means of travel for the community. The mayor and Cape Breton's two Liberal members of parliament announced the funding for two new buses, two hybrid accessible minibuses, five bus shelters, and a smart card payment system for riders. Here's Mayor Amanda McDougall-Merrill's opening remarks. Her first order of business, though, was passing along a compliment to those behind the wheel and behind the scenes.
A couple of weeks ago, I had my annual Mayor's Welcome event, and that's where we chat with newcomers and help share, education and opportunity to learn about the services here at the CBRM. Something really struck me was a lady came up and was like, "I love your bus drivers." And she meant that. It made such a difference in her life to have these people that she depended on each day to get her to her appointments, to make sure that she can travel around the municipality. And she loves the bus drivers. What I said was, you should probably pop down and you can go visit. You can take a look at the buses. Go meet everybody. Meet all the mechanics. It's a team. It's a team that made today happen. This is happening because we work as a team. Our community is growing, and this investment in our infrastructure is a reflection of that. We are now going to be able to connect people to the community at a deeper level. This money is not just about buses. It's about bus shelters. It's about being creative and coming up with hybrid ideas for handy trans. It's about being efficient. It's about thinking about the future. And I'm just so grateful as mayor and on behalf of my council members to have had such great partnership with the federal government in recognizing that we are growing, we are on the up and up, and our community deserves this. So thank you so kindly.
Cape Breton University is stepping up efforts to recruit more international students, resulting in a population increase, and many of them need the bus to get back and forth to school. Cape Breton Council MP Mike Calloway told reporters demand for public transit is on the rise for students, but the upgrade is also a cheaper way for everyone to travel, and it's better for the environment.
Well, the CBRM is growing population-wise. More and more people are using it from CBU, but also people are looking at different modes of transportation to get around the CBRM that were born and raised here. The evolution of transit over the last 10 years has been amazing, and the need has been also equally amazing. So the federal government obviously stepped up here to make a strategic investment in the growth of the CBRM, but also, look, the carbon footprint is important to all of us, and we want to lower emissions. So when we invest in transportation like the announcement today, we want to make sure that it's there's hybrid options involved, as is in this announcement, which is key. But it's an important investment in people and also affordability. We talk about affordability in Canada and across the world. You know, the ability to access transportation that provides more fiscal opportunities for people is key.
Sydney Victoria MP Jaime Batiste agrees ridership is increasing thanks to more students in the area, not to mention public transit is a resource for workers as more businesses and services are setting up.
We know that Cape Breton's growing, and we know that with the growth in jobs, with the growth in students, that we have to have growth in transit. And that's part of what we need to do, not only with the buses, but modernizing how we do it. And, we're seeing so much growth in this area that we have to keep up with our investments from the federal level.
McDougall Merrill says a public transit upgrade wasn't necessary about a decade ago, but things have changed. Now it's part of a growing community. Here she talks about the bus shelters and new technology for the riders paying to get on the bus.
You're going to see bus shelters, which are so, so important as well, because we know that we've got people waiting outside and all the elements, and we want to make sure that they have a safe and dignified place to wait for the bus. But also technology, catching up with the times a bit with the technology that will allow smart card usage. And yeah, it's just a really welcomed investment.
Bigger cities across the country have already implemented smart card payment systems for their public transit. It's a contactless payment system designed to make paying transit fares faster and easier, with the cards having a balance much like a debit card. After the announcement, CKO Radio went to a bus stop in downtown Sydney. Some Cape Breton University students were there. They welcomed news of more buses because there were times they had to wait for another one when a bus was already full of passengers.
If the bus is full kind of thing, we'll have to wait for a couple more hours, like 1 hour, half an hour, or to get into other bus. But yeah, it's a little difficult.
Oh, I experienced it like going to CBU campus or going to going back here in Sydney, and it's always like bus capacity like that. So it took me two bus in order for me to get in.
From the downtown, basically those buses who came from the CBU, this road, so buses mostly found at capacity or out of service or something like that. So I think if there are more buses, then it will be much helpful for everyone who actually commute every day from here to there. So
City Hall doesn't know yet when the new buses will arrive or where the five shelters will be set up in the municipality, but they say everything will be in place within 12 months. Dialogue's news reporter Cora Perigo was on the road this week. She went to Inganish for the Center for Craft and Design's Artists in Residence announcement.
On Wednesday, October 16th, at Salty Roses and Periwinkle Cafe in Inganish, the Cape Breton Center for Craft and Design, in collaboration with Parks Canada, announced fine artist Willow Glufka and textile artist Amanda Strutt as the 2024 Cape Breton Highlands National Park Artists in Residence. Willow, who works in acrylic paint, creates textured, layered landscapes in beautiful, bright colors. She hopes, during her residency, to bring attention to Cape Breton's Appalachian Mountains, a region she feels is neglected when recognizing the beauty of our island. Here she is talking about her work at the event.
Thank you for coming, everyone. This is a lot of people. So my name is Willow Glufka. I do the acrylic landscape paintings, and I've kind of put out already a bit of my process. So these are all paintings I've completed while we've been up here already. We've been up here for, I think, two weeks, a little bit more. So I've been doing a lot of hiking in a beautiful national park. So what I like to do is, while I'm hiking, I'll take a little sketch, just a quick pencil one, and then I'll go back to the studio, and that's where I'll play with color and kind of decide what colors I want to go for. And I find that having that bit of separation of not actually painting while in the field, per se, gives you that chance to play with color. Right now in particular, I'm obviously playing with fall colors. And for whatever reason, for me, fall colors are magentas and teals. So those are kind of the colors I'm playing with. Those are just the ones that kind of speak to me as fall. So you can kind of see in the work I have here already, there is a lot of teals, magentas, not a lot of greens or reds. Just for me, red is more of a summer color. So I'm kind of, developing my fall palette along here, playing with texture, and hopefully going on a lot of hikes in the area to collect my research and be able to create some pieces. The pieces I have here are, small, medium, and hopefully by the end of my residency, I do have some quite big canvases I brought with me. So moving forward, I want to get started on one of those and create a big piece. I will have opportunity for people to come and kind of paint with me and practice this little paint kind of the way that I paint. Coming up, I think we're still maybe working on the dates, but in not this weekend, but the following weekend. So that'll be an opportunity if you're interested in finding out more about the process to come visit me and try it for yourselves.
Amanda, who says rebellion is the muse, began crochet nearly 2 decades ago and is inspired by her environment, especially the ocean, as well as the forest floor. Her textiles are made intuitively, as she follows whatever is inspiring her in that moment and will weave unexpected elements into her work, such as seaweed. Here she is speaking about her practice.
I love adding layers and textures and as much as I can, really, to a piece. I'm very much an ocean water baby, but since I've been here, I've been more gravitating towards the forest and the forest floor and trees and just getting outside, even though it annoyed me at first. But then I gravitating and picking up green and working with that, I'm like, fine, and I just surrender to it. And maybe I'll end it with more ocean leaves because I do like work with seaweed and just exploring and being curious. Like some of my pieces, I put some seaweed in, but it kind of dries up and gets pretty crunchy. Before I was taking bigger pieces of kelp and boarding that, and just see what happens like as it shrinks down and how the stitches change. And it's so much fun to work with the natural elements too. So even like picking up dried pine needles and weaving them into like little brooms and playing. Really, like it's about play and curiosity for me, and taking not the norm and working with it and rebelling. Because in weaving, like it's very traditional, very done a certain way. So it's nice when you can learn the rules and then break them really well. So I like to do that and work intuitively a lot. Like sometimes I don't know what I'm doing, I'll just pick up a color and okay, I want to knit, and I just start doing cables and then making other stitches and changing directions of things and just seeing what it kind of wants to become and there doesn't have to be an outcome. Like, it's not a therapeutic that way, or making something and ripping it out and starting again. It takes a spirit of it, you know?
Both artists are drawn to color in unique and interesting ways, and both say that play is an important part in their practices. According to Cassie McDonald, the residency coordinator at the Cape Breton Center for Craft and Design, the artists were chosen not only because of their skilled work, but due to their plans for programming to involve the community. Willow and Amanda will be residing in Inganish for 6 weeks and invite members of the community to come and play and explore the respective mediums with them. I also sat down and spoke to Alistair Cusack, the Sustainable Craft Coordinator at the Center for Craft and Design, about the artist residency, as well as an event coming up in Sheddy Camp about Sheddy Camp rug hooking.
Yeah, so the Artist in Residence program in Inganish is part of a two-part collaboration that we do with Parks Canada to bring in artists to create bodies of work inspired by the Highland Park, and really promote that natural space that we have in Cape Breton. The first round is the Inganish residency that we had yesterday. We had the two really amazing artists showing off their work. And then the next round is going to be in the summer. We're going to have a residency called Ground Rules, which is going to be more of a group inspiration gathering residency.
And did you want to talk about the upcoming event in Sheddy Camp?
So the event coming up in Sheddy Camp is the culmination of a mentorship program that took place over the summer, where younger folks from Sheddy Camp were paired off with experts in rug hooking and other types of skills related to rug hooking, such as yarn dyeing, hook making, and rug design. And the exhibition opening on the 24th is going to be a display of the works that the mentees produced as part of that program, as well as a couple of more traditional works and a couple of more contemporary works to complement their projects. And this whole mentorship program is part of an initiative that the Cape Breton Center for Craft and Design is collaborating with a few groups and a few artists in Sheddy Camp to try and preserve this really important skill and part of our cultural heritage. So it's going to be in the new Conseil des Arts building, Canton Culturel, in Sheddy Camp from 5 to 7 p.m. It's going to be a really informal reception. The mentees are going to be there, some of the mentors, to talk about the program and the process. And then the pop-up exhibition itself will be open until November 22nd.
And what's your involvement in the project?
Yeah, so I've been acting as a coordinator for the project, just offering the community any support that I can to try and keep things moving along smoothly and make sure that they're able to focus on the actual craft piece and the learning and the connecting as a community. As the manager for the sustainable craft programming at Cape Breton Center for Craft and Design, I'm dealing with sustainability from a not only an environmental perspective, but also a sociocultural and economic perspective as well. And my role in this, from the center's perspective on sustainability, has been to ensure that we can sustain these cultural practices for generations to come. It's really important to the identity, not only of individuals within the community, but the community itself. And as a Acadian community, it's particularly important to preserve their cultural practices. People from around the world really respect Sheddy Camp rug hooking, and it's just become more difficult to pass on these skills because of the economic state of the world. And we don't want to lose that part of their history, this thing that was so important, especially to Acadian women in the community for generations. And recently, there's been a bit of a resurgence, not just in Acadian communities, but in general, of people wanting to connect with a slower life and reconnect with their culture of origin. And this is part of that. This is part of maintaining that community identity and ensuring that people have these practices to ground that in. Yeah, Sheddy Camp rug hooking was really strongly respected and continues to be really strongly respected in the craft community. There's rug hooking pieces from Sheddy Camp in Rideau Hall in Ottawa and in the White House. People in the community were doing pieces for presidents and astronauts and all these really reputable folks. And what makes Shittikan Broad Cooking so special is that it has this very painterly design to it. They really focus on a sort of realism in a lot of their work, and there's just so much detail and shading. But then they also have pieces that are a little bit more whimsical and a little bit more fun, and they're working a lot of these very bright colors, which is why the yarn dyeing part of the mentorship was really important. And they're doing very fine work, very detailed work. So compared to other styles of rug hooking, the Shittikan rug hookers are working with a 2-ply yarn that's very thin, and that allows them to get more loops in their rugs, which allows them to do a lot more detail than some styles of rug hooking that are using thicker materials.
And where could people in Sydney see Shittikan rug hooking?
So we have some rug hooking represented at the Center for Craft and Design. There's not a lot of rug hooking represented within CBRM, authentic Shittikan rug hooking. So I would encourage people to get out to the community itself and meet the artists and see their work in person.
So with this event, do you think that Shittikan rug hooking will continue to be performed for future generations due to projects like this?
We have a lot of momentum on this project. The mentorship program was really successful, and we also worked with a business consultant on a strategic plan for the sector to maintain it, that we've been working with organizations like Les Trois Pignons, Conseil des Arts, to ensure that we can keep this momentum going. The community is really dedicated to making this happen. People have been wanting to see movement on this for a long time because it's such an important part of their history. And I think that this project is, all we did was push it. You know, all we did was get the momentum started as the Center for Craft and Design, and the community is really running with it. So I'm really excited to see where this goes.
The new Sydney Waterfront Campus officially opened on Friday. Dozens of people passed through the doors during the ceremonies, and they were greeted by a variety of performers, including the MacArthur Highland Dancers. Construction started in 2020, and the $170 million campus welcomed students on time and on budget in early September. The provincial government gave a stamp of approval for the new campus after being convinced the Marconi Community College, built in the 70s, was at the point where a new facility would be less expensive than going ahead with upgrades. Chris Clark has been the Achievement Program Coordinator for 4 years.
So the Achieve Program is a kind of a bridging program for new graduates from high school. Our particular program is for students 17 to 21, and we work with the students over the year in developing life skills and work toward independent living skills, job readiness, and such things.
Clark is among the 160 staff members who stopped by the ceremonies on Friday. He said the faculty is thrilled with the new location because it's bigger, it has the latest equipment, and it's in a better location in the downtown area.
You know, we all loved Marconi. It was a great place, but it was certainly a bit of an aged building. And, you know, there were certain things as technology improved. In some ways, we grew out of the building. And having this central location is pretty amazing. Just for my class in particular, you know, we've got wide open windows with a view of the harbor, and we've got, you know, bright space. It's lovely to come in and have that much natural light in the environment. It's, you know, we've got, you know, the newest in technology and things. So to be able to work with students using all those tools, having those at our disposal is a real benefit. And, you know, we're learning some things as we go along the way. And with students coming in, it's kind of nice to do that together. So, yeah, we're discovering new benefits of the building all the time, but we're really excited to be here.
1,000 students signed up for the fall semester. Clark says he's noticing that more and more people are choosing community college because it can be a faster and cheaper pipeline to a job.
I think there are a lot of benefits, and it's becoming more evident to a lot of people these days where, you know, for one, it tends to be a shorter term. People who are going into trades, for example, they're pretty quickly directly into hands-on work that, you know, will be leading to the work that they do, actually training in the job and career that they want. A lot of people see that benefit, and especially with trades that are offered at the school, you know, there's jobs across the province and especially here in Cape Breton these days for skilled workers. I also find a lot of students who may not know that they want to go directly into a university program for 4 years and pay the cost that it is. I've been able to find their way here, particularly my program with Achieve is a good chance for students to kind of have a year of finding what it is they're interested in, getting a better idea of what it is they want to do beyond the college.
Owen McCauley was bouncing between class and meeting visitors at the official opening. He started his training at the former campus and was counting the days for the upgrade downtown.
Yeah, like I was at the old school in Marconi and stuff, and this is all we thought about, like, was just getting in here, and you'd drive by every day and it'd be like a tease almost, because you'd see inside the school and see all the work going on. You're like, I just want to get in and just walk around, you know, because it's huge, like double the size of Marconi. Even some of the, I'd say some of the campuses in Halifax are a little smaller than this. So we got brand new everything, like all of our machines, our welding machines are like top brand new. And the school has everything you could think of. Like there's way too much. It can be overwhelming sometimes, but it's definitely awesome. Like, it's a really, they did a really good job, I'd say.
Principal Carla Arsenal was also looking forward to relocating downtown from the highway.
Well, we are absolutely thrilled to be down here. So this campus was announced back in 2017. It was announced that the campus would be moving. They announced the location back in 2019, and they started construction in 2020. So after 4 years, our doors are finally open. We have our brand new 305,000 square foot facility in the beautiful Sydney waterfront.
She says the list goes on for the reasons why the new campus is better for staff and students.
Well, it really was designed purposely for us. So we've got state-of-the-art shops and labs. We've got beautiful classroom spaces, lots of natural light, beautiful outdoor community space. We have a theater that has 208 seats in a presentation theater. We now have a child care center that's externally run by the YMCA with 50 child care seats. We have a host of other features, including the Applied Research Center and other spaces around the campus that we didn't have in the other one. So we are so excited to be here and really, really thrilled to be sharing it with the community.
Arsenault's attention was in high demand during the official opening meeting and greeting people while helping to organize the events. And she was able to give some time to reporters before wrapping up to move on to a group of smiling visitors. She had this to say.
I just want to say thank you to the community. It has been a long road these past 4 years with construction delays and roadblocks and lots of banging and noise in the downtown core. And you know, we really want to say thank you to the community for your patience and for your acceptance of us in the downtown community. The overall feel and the vibrancy has been just incredible. Our students are absolutely loving this campus, and we are so thrilled to welcome our students and the community and to you know, invite them into our doors to the Nova Scotia Community College Sydney Waterfront Campus.
The new waterfront campus has four buildings dominating the Sydney waterfront. As for the Marconi site, it's expected to be a healthcare clinic opening late next year. It's that time of year again. Two Rivers Wildlife Park is hosting Fright Night. This haunted walk lets you experience 25 minutes of the most frightening encounters with the undead that you have ever imagined. The dimly lit trail weaves through the dense, dark woods of the Myra. Along the trail, over 25 different frightful events will have you quaking with terror. Here's Bill Bradley with his guest, Haley Langwa.
Haley, this is going to be exciting. I know folks look forward to it each and every year, including me. If you've never been, you gotta go. First of all, it'll scare the pants off you, literally. And the money that's raised from this helps out the Two Rivers Wildlife Park, right?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of our biggest fundraisers of the year and helps us continue operations through the winter.
So can you give us any hints of what folks can expect when they get to the Two Rivers Wildlife Park to see the show?
I could give you a little bit of insight. We've definitely are hitting all the fears this year. The theme is Unveil Your Fate. So we've thrown in as many fears and situations, I guess you could say, as possible. And we're really looking forward to get back to scaring this year.
If folks want to go, we want to mention that you can only get your tickets at certain locations. They will not be available at the gate, right?
Yes, that is correct. So you can get them at the park in advance, and we will keep them for you at the office. But you can also pick up tickets from various sponsor locations around town. We have Celtic Kubota and Dodge Street, Gillis Home Building Center, Kings Road, United Farmers Co-op, Celtic Drive, and Cameron's Building Supplies, Glace Bay. And it's cash only at those locations.
And something you started a couple of years ago since the pandemic, and I think this is a good switch, you can pick the time you can go, whether it's 7, 8, or 9. Tell us a bit about that.
Yes, so the gates open at 6 for the park, so you can start coming in anytime after 6 o'clock, but you do select the time for your tickets. So it's 7, 8, and 9, and we've done that just to control the flow of traffic so people can enjoy the live music that we have going on during the event and not stand in line the entire night.
And then it happens again next weekend as well, the same time, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, and still with the Sunday Family Day, which is very popular, especially if you have kids that may be sensitive to sounds or maybe don't want to be out at night and maybe a little bit too scared. Tell us a bit about the Sunday event.
Yes, on Sunday we have Family Day, which is the kids-friendly Fright Night Trail. So it's from 12 until 3. We have live music by, it's actually Hubba Paris's old band, Rooster Hill. They're going to be playing live, and there's pumpkin carving, trick-or-treating on the trail. The canteen's open down in the field. And we're going to have a costume parade at different times for the kids, a scavenger hunt, lots to do and lots to enjoy for the family Fright Night Day.
So what time does that start Sunday afternoon?
That is from 12 until 3.
And if folks are looking for tickets, as mentioned, you can pick them up at those locations. You can also pick them up at the Two Rivers Wildlife Park, but you got to give them a shout ahead at 727-2483, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And for Family Day, you can just pay at the gate.
All right, Haley, looking forward to it. It sounds pretty scary.
Yes, we're looking forward to it.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun. The party had just begun. The guests included Wolfman, Dracula, and his son. The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five. They played the Monster Mash. It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, "Whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?"
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool. Drax a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you, the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Boris sent you.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And you, my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Oh.
Mash. Ooh.